Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast comes from the patrons at patreon.com/FMLFPL. Okay, welcome to another Fireside Chat. This is Alon. Today I'm joined by Praz, new co-host of the FPL Wire and the busiest man in FPL. Praz, how you doing?
I'm very well, very excited to be here. My first appearance on, you know, much like Late Riser, a favorite pod of mine. Miss you guys any of the week, so really, really pleased to be on.
Dude, I appreciate it. And you're doing great work, as always. What keeps a man like you busy in the international break? Are you taking a little time away from FPL, or are you still just pumping out the content?
I mean, it's, you know, when people say they need a break away, for me, it's like a hobby. You know, it's like when you play a mobile game, like, you know, Clash of Clans or whatever people play, right? You never need a break from that. I mean, I'm always sort of thinking about the game. So
yeah,
I actually enjoy these breaks because the real pain for me is the weekend when your players blank and the other guys who you didn't buy score points. And actually these breaks are nice where you think about stuff, you know, the meta, where am I going, what should I do. I've gone up to game week 19 in my transfer plan, so this is what I've been doing.
That is so far removed from like the core of FMLFPL. Like Walsh and I just, you know, are you kidding me, game week 19? Like,
I can just see Walsh insane. If he listens to this smirking and basically saying what an idiot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I told him I was like, yeah, I'm doing a thing with Praz on Monday. I was like, maybe not exactly your type of FPL manager, you know? And he was like, okay, you're doing it, right? And I was like, yeah, I'm doing it. Don't worry about it.
But this is why I love you guys. I mean, I actually encourage people to listen to different types of managers because there's obviously no right answer. And I wish I could do what you guys can do, which is watch the game and have a really good assessment of here's what I can do in the next 3 weeks because I like this guy. This is what is about to happen. I have no clue. I can't watch every game. I can't sort of have a view on, no clue between Madison, Saka or Bruno who scores more points. I'm just going to keep picking the guy with better fixtures and hopefully that little bit of edge with an easier fixture works out.
Right. And that's ultimately, I think, what's great about FPL is that there's, like you said, no right answer, a million different point of views that are all valid, you know, and there's another million that I feel like are invalid, and then those people do better than me anyway. So it's like, I mean, you know, there's just so many different ways to approach everything. I think the fixtures thing you mentioned is definitely something I see a lot, especially more nowadays, and I guess last season too, but just seems like all of the big sort of content creators are sort of on a similar page. And I don't know if that has something to do with maybe, you know, the review and so, and like the algorithmic approach.
Yep.
But I see everyone kind of saying like, okay, so-and-so team has a good next four fixtures, so I'm bringing in this guy. And then, you know, everyone on FPL Twitter is like, oh, what about like, you know, Salah? And then all the content creators are like, I'm waiting for game week 9 for Salah because they have this run and this team has that run. So I'll switch up. And the planning, like, this is all just like so out of my comfort zone, right? I mean, like, old school FFS, which I know you're still a part of, it's like that. It was always like next 4, next 6. Like, yeah, that's the maximum amount of planning where we're like, okay, yeah, and then reevaluate because things change. But that is definitely the approach that you go for. And have you found that to be a successful approach, just relying so hard on like a fixture planner and a run of fixtures?
Yeah. Look, I think I have done it since the FF Scout days. So
yeah,
while this is, again, why Late Riser and I sort of knew each other on Scout, where he used to be the guy calling, I'm going to captain Vardy in 3 weeks. And I'm like, why would you have Vardy? And the guy scores a hat-trick. And yeah, so I'd always look at him and go, how is he playing it? What am I missing? But I have sort of stuck to the core of what I believe. And there's a really geeky way to answer this. I mean, effectively, we're all sort of tossing a coin. You have 11 coins and we're all tossing it every week. And there is no way to affect it other than planning for me having the best odds of my coin versus your coin. So if you have sort of said, I'm going to go for Salah, and Salah has, you know, let's say he's playing Villa and he has other difficult fixtures. And I'm going to say, look, I'm going to try and beat it because even though Salah is a better player, maybe Bruno will do well. Obviously, that doesn't work every time, but I'm just trying to influence that little bit where I can influence, make a little bit of change. But that's just the way I have always played, and it always plays into it more the season goes on, because the more the season goes on, you have underlying data, you can say a little bit with more conviction if you really think Madison with better fixtures is indeed better than Bruno with bad fixtures and vice versa. So it's just my style, and I sort of have always backed myself with that.
Right. And that's kind of what I was going to ask is, how are you sort of weighting that in your head of like, okay, you know, Luton all of a sudden have an incredible run and a double in game week 7, but I'm pretty sure you're not bringing in triple Luton, right? So like, there is obviously some weighting and some evaluation of how teams are playing, who's in form, who are the good assets, stats, yada, yada. What do you like to look at?
Well, basically all of that. It's effectively opportunity cost as well, right? I mean, if I'm bringing a player, who am I losing? And this year, I think it'll be a big topic where people will lose Madison for Foden and hey, Madison gets a 10-pointer. People will sell Foden this week for Son. Maybe Foden gets a 10-pointer. You just have to live with that. But if I'm losing a good player for a pretty mediocre player who has 2 mediocre games, then in my head, everything comes down to what is my expectation of what happens. Well, I expect Luton to lose both those games because those games are actually easy for Everton and Burnley, not for Luton. But if, you know, I have Jackson in that spot, or if somebody has Pedro in that spot and that's, the, you know, they're performing in a shitty manner anyway, then it's fine to go for a Morris because the guy's on penalties. You know what? 2 games out of 38, if he gets a penalty, fine, you're okay. So I'm not going to captain him, but I do think there is space for him. Now let's come to midfield. There's no bloody way I'm going to get a midfielder from Luton or Burnley because the opportunity cost of selling any one of the guys that we have is too high.
Yeah. And I think that goes hand in hand with the fixtures as well. Like, even just, I mean, I want to move on to Newcastle because I think they're forefront of the conversation sort of right now with their swing starting sort of this week, more next week. But when you look and you compare, right, like Spurs, Arsenal, Liverpool, Man United, like less good runs, but how much worse are the runs and how much better are the teams and the players? That's where it starts to become tricky for me. And I was looking at Newcastle sort of going, preparing for this pod because I know a lot of people are going to get trips and I don't know who else people are getting from that team. But, you know, I look at the run and I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good, but like, how good is this team? Really hard to evaluate, I think, based off of last season, based off of how hard their last 3 fixtures were, that they lost all 3 in a row. And then like, how much do I expect them to keep cleans? They haven't kept cleans in a really long time. And I don't know what to do with Newcastle.
I mean, Newcastle is actually a really good example in terms of separating the managers who back long-term underlying data, basically the geeks, versus people who are watching and creating an opinion based on things that are changing in the future, they expect to change in the future. So 2 schools of thoughts. One is Newcastle have just played Brighton, Villa, Liverpool, and Man City. That's as hard as it gets. But in terms of big chances conceded, they're number two, only after Man City. So even though they played those four hard teams, they only conceded two big chances. So you could say, as the fixtures improve, you know, the clean sheets will come back. Somebody else will say, look, we're in uncharted territory. Newcastle have never played in the Champions League. It's a bloody tough draw. They're playing Man City in the Carabao Cup. This is going to be rotation central. I would sort of sit somewhere in the middle where I would say, look, if I do believe in Newcastle defense, I think everybody should have Botman, you know, if they're on a wild card, because long term, I think he's the best 4.4, 4.5 million defender. You'll need him at various points. And I think Newcastle defense is good for that. But maybe I'm also now considering, do I need Trippier? Because getting Trippier, I will sacrifice someone else. Maybe I can't get to a Son. Maybe I can't get to a Jesus if I wanted to. So for me, I sit somewhere in the middle, and that's always, I'm not rigid in my thought that I think Newcastle defense is great, even though they've kept two clean sheets in 22 games. Yeah. I am a little bit more balanced with that.
Yeah. And I was looking a little deeper into their numbers too, because I think, well, everything's messed up, right? It's four games. Like, you can basically create any narrative you want, right? But one interesting number that I was looking at is just, I just looked at the minutes where they've been level or winning so far this season. And that's 236 out of their 360 minutes so far. So a lot, more than half. And they're 11th in non-penalty conceded per 90 in those minutes. Right. And so the reason I thought to even look at that is because I was thinking, okay, what happened in that City game? Did they really like shut City down? Or did City take the lead and just dominate the ball? Newcastle just couldn't do anything. And yeah, that's what happened, right? And and you think of the other games they played were a little bit weird. It was like, okay, Brighton, Ferguson had a massive chance, went up 1-0. Brighton kind of shut Newcastle down a little bit, scored too late. And, you know, and that's kind of what happened. So I don't know. I mean, you can construct anything you want. I'm worried about the European games too, though. I'm worried about rotation. There's so many unknowns, I think, more than usual because of the changeup of what teams actually qualify for the Champions League and Europa League, right? And we don't know how Eddie Howe is going to rotate. We don't really know how Arteta is even going to rotate. I mean, we expect Liverpool to play a backup 11 in Europa. We don't know what Brighton's going to do. We don't know what Villa is going to do. So I just feel like right now there's just like more unknowns than usual, except for maybe the midfielders that you mentioned, that like everyone kind of has a different five, but they're all from a group of 10, right? It's like there's like 10 midfielders that everyone wants and you just have five of them.
Yeah. I think with Newcastle, I mean, coming back to that, you know, you mentioned all these other teams. None of them are ideal over the next four or five. And I'm going to throw out fixtures a lot because, again, going back to our conversation in the beginning, look, Arsenal play Spurs and Man City in the next four. So, you know, going for a Saliba or a Gabriel, not ideal. Man United are decent, but they don't have a defense. They don't have a fit defender you can go for, and the defense is poor. You know, Man City is Man City, but they have West Ham away and Arsenal in the next four as well. So you could punt on them, or punt maybe is not the right word, but Man City is fine. You know, you've looked at Brighton. Brighton, a very tough run. Also, the Champions League. Apart from Bournemouth at home in Game Week 6, they have no other fixture where I can say I can bank on Estupiñán getting a 15-point.
I mean, I can't bank on them getting a clean in any game. They're not even in the conversation. Yeah,
exactly. So that's where a little bit of an edge comes, where you can say, even if you're going for a share, you can say, look, maybe I get some clean sheets where nobody's getting clean sheets.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then what am I losing out? So I'm maybe losing out on one transfer that I've spent, but the upside with actually getting three cleans out of four when nobody else has good fixtures, I think that's great.
The alternative is, okay, say you get Cher, right? Say I go from, you know, just looking at my team, Colwell to Cher or something like that, or I buy her to Cher, right? I find 0.5 and do that, right? Is that worth it when I could maybe be getting Son instead? I could be maybe getting an attacker with hat trick potential instead, who also has, you know, two out of four or three out of four good fixtures. Like, I don't know, what's Cher going to get you? You know, a couple 6-pointers, best case, you know, and so that's where I struggle.
If you're spending your transfer there, then I think there's no debate. But when you're going to spend your transfer in midfield, you're not guaranteed to get that hat trick. Yeah. You could actually sell the guy who gets the hat trick.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, for me, in midfield, actually, I was talking to LR again, in terms of how you could play this season, you could have two approaches. And obviously, people can be in the middle. But one could be, you're saying, I'm not going to touch my defense. I'm not going to touch my attack because I've got Haaland and let's say put a glue guy there, like Watkins or, you know, let's play Jesus. Whoever. And say, I'm not going to touch these guys. In the five midfielders, I'm going to hop around whoever plays bloody Luton or Sheffield United, or, you know, go to Saka, go to Bruno, go to Rashford, go to Madison, Son. And just that's where you get your upside. Or you could say, I think between these eight midfielders, all of them are going to have a 220-point season. I'm just captaining Haaland pretty much every week. Maybe, you know, there will be exceptional weeks like this one, maybe, where Son is an option.
Yeah, this one. Yeah.
But you could have that option as well, where I go, I'm going to have Bruno in my team for the next 5 weeks. He's going to get one penalty, probably a couple of other returns. He's not going to be that far off a Son or a Saka.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. So hard. It's so hard to... And it's so hard and it feels almost painful to me to, like, I got rid of Saka. I made my move early because I had exact money for Son. I don't really feel great about it, but I did it, you know, before even the Arsenal Man United game because I needed to. And now I'm like staring at my team, right? And I don't have Saka for at Everton. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? You know, like, Arsenal's going to score five. You know, Everton played this like open attacking style and it's just like perfect for Arsenal. But, you know, who knows? You know, maybe they're up 2-0 and Saka comes off because they have Champions League 2 days later, 3 days later, right? So that's another wrinkle of stuff we just don't really know yet. So, yeah.
I mean, narratives, right? People have sold Rashford for Son. I think Baker has done that. And again, the next two games for Rashford are amazing. Unless he's
I'd rather have Rashford than most midfielders in the game. When I see home... Brighton, away, Burnley. I don't know if there's a midfielder I want more than Rashford for the next two, honestly.
And there's no midfielder you want more than Madison and Son this week at home to Sheffield United. So the narrative is, the FOMO is just so real. And I think everyone is going through this.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a world where Son returns, Rashford braces, and next week I'm doing Son to Rashford. And I just brought him in. And he's playing striker at a position. And I feel incredible about owning Son. And I might just do that. Even though I think, you know, there's goals at Arsenal. There's goals home Liverpool. It just might happen. So I don't know. We're going to... It's constantly adapting which style you want to go for. And I do think that there's something that holds true, which is you kind of have to... You don't have to choose a style. That's not the right word. But... It would be beneficial for your sanity to choose one or the other style because you're not going to get the hat trick right every time, right? Like you said, you might transfer out the 10-pointer this week. But if you keep going for it and keep picking the Burnley fixture and the Luton fixture, you're more likely to hit hat tricks over, you know, the greater the quantity that you're more likely to hit it. So you can't just do it this week and then not do it for... the next six game weeks and then do it again in game week 12 and be like, oh, I suck. It never works when I do it. You kind of have to keep doing it, right? You kind of have to keep throwing that dart and being like, no, if I just keep banging on Luton, they suck. They suck. They suck. They suck. Eventually, I'm going to hit a five, right? So that's what you got to do.
Yeah. And finding blocks where you can do that makes it even easier. So you're not sort of, you know, like a headless chicken moving through the changes. So if you do it in blocks, you know, like, you know, targeting a Diaby when Diaby plays home Luton, home Nottingham Forest, away Fulham in, I think, 10, 11, 12, hit it. Sell your Mbumos. Don't have FOMO because you have 0.1 tied up in Mbumo. You got to have like ruthlessness this season. It feels like, I mean, we may be wrong sitting here in 4 weeks, but you got to be ruthless where pick the fixture, forget about team value or any value locked in any player.
Yeah, I mean, we like this is constantly through the FPL season, I think we're all making sort of like declarations and none of them are 100% right, right? Like you just mentioned, yeah, Villa go home West Ham, home Luton, at Nottingham Forest, home Fulham, 9 through 12. Well, Bumo's home Burnley, at Chelsea, home West Ham, at Liverpool. And he could just outscore him. Right. And then we're sitting here being like, oh, idiot, never should have got rid of Bumo, best pick in the game. But, you know, yeah, like I said, you gotta just decide to go for that stuff or not, I think. What about hits? Where does a manager like you stand on hits? I mean, I think a point that Walsh made recently that I liked is just, you know, we've all been playing the game, you know, 10 plus years at this point. hits were always lava, right? Never take a hit. Like once in a while, maybe for a double game week or something, you take a hit or something like that. But we score more points every year. The total, right? The FPL winner every season scores 100 more points than the last one or something crazy like that. And Haaland makes the game even crazier and Chips makes the game even higher scoring, right? But we still treat hits the same way. Right. And that just doesn't sit right with me. It doesn't sit right with Walsh, but I haven't really spent time or done any math on like, well, what should it be? I don't really know. What do you think about hits?
I mean, at least fundamentally, I sit on the other side of the spectrum where I'm still sort of anti-hits, but it's not just this is what I do. Firstly, on the points getting larger, I just think we've been through COVID and the Queen stuff last season where we've had more double game weeks than ever. So I think there's a little bit of a synthetic points are getting more. I think people are doing better as well. They're picking better players because of underlying data coming into our lives and us understanding the difference between a Jackson and a Richarlison. Both were playing up front for teams that were doing all right, but you understand, we now understand better that maybe let's be patient a couple more weeks on Jackson because big chances are coming. Let's throw this Richarlison guy out because X minutes are low and his numbers are really bad. So yes, I think managers are getting better. So
Sports Social, now on the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is Pedro from the Arsenal Opinion podcast, and I am hyped about the title running. Can Arsenal pit Pep and Klopp? Will our young squad be described as mentality monsters? Is Mikel Arteta truly a generational saucy manager? Come and join us on the Arsenal Opinion podcast to follow the boys on this historic 2024 Premier League title running and hear analysis of the games, the hottest transfer rumours, the Arsenal culture, and the business of football. 3 times a week exclusively on the Sports Social Podcast Network. Search the Arsenal Opinion now and come and join the fun.
While points are getting more, I also think there's a lot more engaged managers. A 4-point hit is a lot because you're losing 4 points to engaged manager field, where it used to be 10 years ago, it was maybe 30,000 of us or 50,000 of us. Do you take a hit and you can maybe recover it because, your competition is lower. You are now playing against, I would say, 300,000 to 500,000 really, really super engaged. I mean, Andy, Let's Talk FPL on Twitter has 300,000 followers. That just tells you that
there's... the minimum number, right?
Exactly. Not everyone follows him on Twitter. So this is what we're up against. And I just feel, look at last season, by the end of it, people were still bunched up. Even in the top 100K, there were people who moved from 15K to 30K last year. I myself was like 64K and I finished 37K just because I punted on Jesus and Kane cap, or vice versa. I think Jesus cap and Kane hit those two transfers, jumped like 30K on the last game week.
Yeah.
So I feel...
I'm the same, by the way. I did Kane cap game week 38. I went from, I don't know, 50K to 20K or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So the days where it was not bunched up by game week 38 and we're all done and dusted, hits don't matter because we're also separated, I don't think that is true anymore because there will be still a lot of people within your... Now, this doesn't mean completely that hits are a no-no. I think for people like Walsh who want to enjoy the game, everybody plays the game different. Not everyone is playing for overall rank. Right. If you want to enjoy the game, honestly, this season, hits are going to be so fun. Because you
can get Foden home
to Fulham. You can get, Son at home to Sheffield United and Madison if you want. You can just jump around and have fun.
Yeah. And especially, like you mentioned, the Haaland weeks where he's not an automatic captain, which Walsh and I are this week at West Ham. Not for us, an automatic captain. Like, I'm definitely not capping him this week. I would captain Mo and Son ahead of him just in my team alone. And I think there's other shouts too. And that makes it even more upsidey and fun because, he's still going to be 95% captained in like the elite teams and stuff. So that's kind of interesting. What do you think about Son and Matto? And, they have home Sheffield this week and then at Arsenal, home Liverpool, before at Luton, home Fulham. So mixed bag. Like, what are you bringing them in, or what are you doing with Spurs?
So I will have one. Well, I never say 100%, but I plan to have both of them by Luton. Whether I get one of them this week or not, my problem is if I look at the next 3 game weeks, right? Yes, there is Sheffield United, but then there's Arsenal away and Liverpool at home. Now, again, you guys with the eye test, with, you know, with the way you see the game, you'll say Liverpool, huh? I mean, it's fine. I mean, Sun, if he plays up top, there's goals there. Arsenal, yeah. North London Derby, always been goals.
Always
but
goals.
Again, me with the fixtures guy goes, okay, you know, it is a harder fixture. Maybe there's goals. Maybe it's a 0-0. Maybe it's a 1-0. Maybe they lose. So I'm thinking, okay, I compare Sun now with a Rashford who has, you know, Brighton at home this week, Crystal Palace at home in 3 weeks, and yeah. Burnley away.
Right.
Maybe he can do well as well. So I'm hesitating selling my Man United guys. Same for Arsenal. You talked about Everton away, and there's another Bournemouth away in the next three. I might do Saka to Sun as well for the reasons that you mentioned, that, you know, have to have Sun, especially if I think about captaining him. I might do it. But a part of me says, just wait for 3 weeks, sell Sterling, sell Saka. Saka will play Man City. Sterling will be over his really good run. And if he disappoints, he'll be dumped anyway. And so that's my plan. I would get Sun and Madison for those two guys in game week 8. But will I miss the boat with the Sheffield United game?
Maybe.
This is what my dilemma is.
Yeah, maybe. And, you know, I've had Mo since game week 1. I capped him in game week 2. That was my big, oh my God, I'm going to cap him in game week 2. And he got 5 points. And it's like, all right, well, it was better than every other cap. But it was, you know, I barely went up because of that. So that's, you know, that's in my head a little bit.
I mean, that's the other thing with my play style. I hesitate to take risk, and I fall into the category of, you know, the people who you said who do it sometimes and then they shy away and they don't. I struggle. I mean,
By the way, me too. Yeah. I'm like that too.
And I think of the times where, you know, last season, game week 9, I was literally shaking, captaining Salah home to Brighton, and it, you know, it was Haaland against my own team, Man United. So I said, no, this aligns with how I want to watch the game. I don't want Haaland to do anything. I think Salah is a better captain anyway. Captain Salah gets 5 points and Haaland gets 5 returns. 3, you know, obviously the hat-trick plus the 2
that
assists.
Was the 6-3, right?
I was literally on the floor next to the sofa and I could not watch, and I was listening to the commentary every time the ball would go into the box. Haaland, goal. Haaland, goal. And it's just an experience where if I'm watching the game, I just cannot do that. And this is where I struggle.
Yeah, I think watching the matches is actively bad sometimes. I think that, like, I don't know, people associate something like eye test with just an objectively good thing, right? We're all, you know, evaluating objectively, just trying to make the best picks, make the best judgment calls. Like, it's just as biased as the stats story you want to tell yourself. You know, it doesn't matter how good or bad a scout you are. You know, you can make things up in your head. No, but he was, he didn't get a shot, but he was almost on the end of 3 different things. You know, whatever you want to tell yourself, it's there. And yeah, I mean, watching the games can be really painful, especially when you have a haul go against you like that. But I've always been on the fence. I think back in the day, maybe around when Walsh and I started potting and the seasons before that, I was much more like mad scientist style. Like, I just had crazy picks, I had crazy transfers, and I did well. I did pretty consistently well. And I think since potting, I've been much more on like one shoulder being like, this is what I should do, and the other shoulder being like, but this is what I really fucking want to do. And I don't know when to choose which. And it sometimes depends on how good or bad my last game week went, which is not a great way
to
be.
You think you have points in the bank, so you can go gamble them a little bit more.
Or you're depressed because you just had a nightmare and you're just like, well, I need to rip my team apart right now, even though the picks are good. I mean, last year, I think I wild carded right after Man United beat Liverpool. In like game week 4, my team was 100% good. Like, I had the exact same team as everyone else, and I was like, my team's good. And I just ripped it to shreds. It was just like, Liverpool sucked this year. Like, you know, I'm a Liverpool supporter. So, speaking of wild card, what's in your game week 19 plans? Like, you clearly have your whole season planned out. So, when are you wild carding, and who are you getting?
Well, look, I mean, I think I did this video on the wire like on Friday. And it's basically what I like to do is I just like to make a wildcard draft at various points of the season. Like, if I was to wildcard today, what would it look like? If I was to wildcard in game week 8, what would I build? Obviously, based on information that I have now, this will change when I sit in game week 8. But it helps me basically do two things. Number one, determine how far am I from that wildcard. So if I make a game week 8 wildcard, for example, I'll have Mo. I'll have Watkins. I'll have probably DRB, a Newcastle. So I'm thinking maybe I can't get to that if that's my ideal setup. So that immediately tells me by game week 8, I should start thinking about a wild card.
Right.
Then I need to compare that with how will my own team look in game week 8. So when I look at my own team in game week 8 and game week 9 using the transfers that I've talked about, where I'll get Sun, I'll get Madison, you know, I will probably get Awoniyi against Luton in game week 9. Then I think actually game week 10, that's the time when I need to wildcard because Brighton's fixtures get really good. Liverpool's fixtures are still good. Villa get into this fixture run that you talked about at the earlier in this pod. And so this is how I think about it. Does it mean I'll definitely wildcard in game week 10? Absolutely not. If my team is doing really well, if I still have Bruno and Rashford and they've scored 15 goals in the next five games, then I'm happy to hold them. But at the moment, based on the information I know, Manchester United are wobbling. They keep losing anyone who plays on the right for them. You know, they don't have a defender. So I am skeptical holding Bruno and Rashford for the next five game weeks. I think I will at some point need to get Spurs players. Obviously, I have free transfers to do that, but I have triple Chelsea. What if they score nothing against Bournemouth? You know, my team looks really, really terrible. So I guess long answer to your question, yes, I have planned out transfers, but we are getting information. We will get 20% more information next game week and so on and so forth. And I can wildcard as early as game week 6, game week 7, but more likely I'm going to hold out and be patient until game week 10.
Yeah, I think that's, I've never actually done that, but I think that that sounds like a really productive exercise. I mean, I've been trying last couple seasons to like mess with different ways of planning, different ways of consolidating all the, you know, information I'm gathering throughout the, you know, not just the matches, stuff I see on Twitter, stuff I hear on other pods, whatever it is. And lately for me, it's been not making wildcard teams, but, you know, it's just sort of writing down, you know, stupid stuff like, oh my God, I need Matto. Like, oh my God, Raz. You know, like that's the type of stuff I write down. But that's enough for me to just be able to, okay, I mean, I'm going to make my transfer. I kind of flip a few pages back. I'm like, wow, it's funny. I thought like I needed Eze, you know, 2 weeks ago, I thought I needed Eze by game week 4. And now I'm like, eh, you know, he's okay. He's good. But like, you know, things have changed. And now I prefer this guy, you know. It's interesting. In that book that I made, it's like a little planner notebook. I think I wrote, it's like an Eisenhower quote or something. It's like, plans are worthless, but planning is everything.
Absolutely. I think, oh, I'm going to take that. This is great. I mean, this is exactly
such
it.
A good quote.
I just think for me to make a transfer, I think this thought process people have is I want player X, I'm going to get player X, which is fine.
Right.
I envy those people. For me, it's I want player X. Who will I sell to get player X? Then if I sell this player, I will have X money in the bank. Can I afford Y player that I want next week? And then Z player who I want the week after. I am my worst enemy, where this is the thing. I want Trippier this week. If I go Trippier, I can't get Sun in game week 7. And I'm in my mind the whole time. Who do I want Trippier now or do I want Sun in game week 7?
You must be fun on a date. Exactly. You can't imagine
I open with that.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to pick what should we get for an entree? Should we split? And you're like, but if we split, I can't get the garlic bread I really want. Let's talk about your team a little bit. So you're on Rashford, Bruno. I'm on Bruno, desperately wishing I had Rashford. Anthony's in a whole lot of mess. So we don't know who's going to play on the right. I feel like I don't know who the midfield is. I'm not sure who's going to play fullback. I assume Hoyland's going to just start because I thought he looked really good against Arsenal. What do you think? You mentioned the wobble, but this is another thing that I always struggle with and always have struggled with is trying to separate how well a team is playing from how good are their FPL assets, because sometimes it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. Like you can have a sixth place team and just have a great pick that you should hold all season. Right. I mean, Kane last year. Right.
Exactly.
That doesn't matter. Right. And so I sort of am leaning towards, Bruno Rashford are just going to get their points, whether Manchester United finish eighth or fifth. But how do you feel about them right now?
Yeah, I'm similar. I mean, I think we have to look at the picks in isolation. And it just happens to be that the two best picks are both midfielders where there is the highest pressure to move them on. But I think as FPL picks, they're both great FPL picks. I think yes, we lose Antony. And I think that hurts us more in defense than in attack, because Antony actually was working very hard. That's where Ten Hag liked him. And he could do what, you know, these days the traditional wingers are supposed to do, hold the ball, not lose possession, you know, the Grealish types. Now, he's not as good as Grealish, but he was doing the stuff that Ten Hag wanted him to. So you could see Man United obviously change either fundamentally. And fundamentally, I mean, like, you know, Bruno could move to the right, or you could have Rashford move to the right and Garnacho plays on the left. Right. I am a little bit less convinced that we are going to make fundamental changes. I mean, it could be that Pelestri, he's a youngster who could come in and plays right. He's actually fairly decent. You could have Mount play there. Because, you know, once now that we've signed Amrabat, you could have Casemiro and Amrabat playing there, Mount playing as the 10, and Bruno moves to the right, or Mount moves to the right. So as a team, I don't think it spoils the attack too much, because the big positive, as you mentioned, is Højlund is back. And in the very short cameo, obviously we can be deceived because Jackson looked great in preseason. You know, people can struggle when they start in the Premier League. You know, when he gets a cameo where Gabriel is injured and Man United is chasing the game and he does well, you know, it could be that those 15 minutes are not representative of his start. But on paper, I think it should be great. There's a target man who can hold the ball. Rashford can make the run behind, who loves to do that. So it makes Rashford a good pick. Bruno's just dropped 3 assists and a goal tonight because he'd had Ramos as the striker who could head a ball.
They played against Luxembourg, though. So.
Fair enough. But you know what I mean? Like, if you have a target man, Bruno becomes a decent pick as well. And he's on penalties. You know, Mbeumo's got 2 penalties. Rashford has 2. Arsenal have 2. Man United still have 1. So I think each of them are good enough picks. But I can also understand if people think, like, I don't want 2 Man United assets and I'm going to gamble on selling 1. You could be wrong. You could sell Bruno and, you know, Bruno Halls and, you know, you could keep Rashford and he doesn't do well. But this is why I think it's okay to hold them, because their next 5 are actually really, really good.
Yeah. And the thing that I will say in defense of Nico Jackson, right, is he looks great in preseason. Obviously, he's been missing sitters, but 2 things. He's getting sitters. And the other thing is, every other part of his game has been as good as advertised, right? They just don't have another goal score, right? You can imagine a world where Nkunku's there and Nico has 3 assists. It's like his passing is so good. His runs are so good. The cutbacks are good. All that stuff that was advertised has actually been as good as advertised. There's just no one there, right? And so when I think about Højlund, it's like, sure, he could miss sitters, right? He has like 9 goals or something as a professional. I don't even know. But the other stuff looked really good in the 15 minutes. And that's, as Rashford and Bruno owners, that's what we care about more, right?
Yeah.
I'm fearful for not owning Rashford, like I said, but as you said, and I think is correct, I mean, Bruno could get more touches in the box because, you know, Antony's out and another defensive midfielder's in to do the running and he, you know, he gets all the points. So who knows there? But yeah, we're aligned with that.
I mean, Man United defense, if people have Onana, that's for me, a bigger red flag. I mean, not that you're going to make an Onana transfer now, but we are struggling. I mean, we're struggling. Maybe Amrabat comes and helps, but I think the defense is more an emergency problem than a midfielder, because I think you can be patient with both of them. And I think people will panic even more if Brighton, you know, if we draw 1-1 against Brighton, I can see another price drop coming for both. But actually, the next 4 after that are the ones that I want them for.
So the next 4 after Brighton, at Burnley, home Palace, home Brentford, at Sheffield United. It's pretty damn good. Pretty damn good. Yeah, I just don't trust this team for cleans. And this is, you know, there's all kinds of areas and parts of the games where people are separated by what they believe. And like, if you paid attention to last season's defensive numbers, I mean, Manchester United had worse non-penalty conceded than Tottenham and level with Liverpool. But the way that people talked about Onana and Shaw's picks pregame and Kwan was like, this is the best defense in the league. They kept the most cleans. And it's like, well, you're kind of cutting the pie the way you wanted for your narrative. But yeah, I think we're seeing that, you know, the cleans are far from guaranteed with this team. So I'm with you there.
Absolutely.
One thing that I wanted to also bring up and just see what you, I mean, this is just a vibes podcast. It just, what's up, Praz? Let's talk about whatever and see what's going on. But so, like, I'm with you on Nico Jackson. I'm a Sterling owner myself. I think, you know, it's been positive enough to hold. They're getting the chances. The goals will come, yada, yada, yada. And I think this also aligns a bit with what we were talking about with Newcastle earlier, just something I thought of during this break. The one thing that no one is talking about is that the points are not on the board. Like, the team's performances are one thing, but they're not actually getting the points, right? Newcastle's sitting on 3 points in four games. Chelsea's sitting on 4 points in four games, and Chelsea had a good run of fixtures.
Yep.
So the managers might change stuff. Like, I don't know, you know, different managers handle situations differently. You know, if this is Pep, they're just going to keep pepping and things will just work out and City will just start winning every game, right? What's Eddie Howe going to do? I don't know. You know, what's Poch going to do? He's going to be under pressure. They got booed off the pitch. You know, like, what's going to happen? I have absolutely no idea. You know, so that is, I think, a little seed of doubt that I do have that I feel like no one's talking about with Newcastle and Chelsea specifically.
I'm totally with you. I think, and that's... on the other flip side of the coin, there's the vibes with Spurs, where you know that they're buzzing, you know, the crowd are behind them, easy fixture. They will, even at 4-0, try to score two more. Totally with you. But again, coming back to what we have learned. So let's take Chelsea, for example. You know, you hope that Poch obviously is, you know, also follows the mantra that if Jackson is getting the chances or if he's sort of being pivotal to the play, then it's not Jackson who he shifts around. It's maybe, you know, maybe I'm being an idiot and playing Chilwell left wing. Maybe I should play an actual midfielder who can actually play in midfield. Yeah. So stuff like that absolutely can change. Maybe Gusto is, you know, an experiment where he will say, look, I just need James back ASAP. If he was winning, he would say, oh, I'm going to give James a few more games and, you know, ease him in. Now maybe he's desperate to start him. They've had an issue with Lavia. Maybe Casado and Enzo. Enzo would have played further up top. Maybe they can't afford it because they want to be more solid defensively. We're obviously speculating, but it absolutely plays in their mind. What happens when they're 1-0 ahead and it's the 70th minute? If it's a Spurs, they go for 3-0. Yep. If it's a Chelsea, they're thinking, man, we need these 3 points. So is the transfer Sterling out for another defender? Maybe because of Chelsea's point. So it always, always matters. You're right.
Right. Yeah. So that's something, if I was, you know, I already made my move. I'm probably not taking a hit. But if someone had the money for like a Sterling to a Son or something like that, or Sterling even a Rashford, right? That would be playing in my mind a lot, right? Where it's not just the players and the fixtures. It's also, I don't know what to expect from Chelsea. And I don't know if Sterling is going to continue being in the positions that he's in, or if the best way to play is actually Sterling should be playing Chilwell's spot because we need to find a way to get, you know, Broya in the game or Madueke or something. And they need to play on the right. And, you know, it just messes everything up. And all of a sudden he's a terrible pick.
I'm with you. I mean, on the other side of the coin, we already went to the other side with Spurs. Well, on the same side, but a different part of the coin, if you look at Newcastle, I think the manager has less to prove. So even though the results haven't been there, he's had a brilliant
tough
season.
Fixtures.
And they've had tough fixtures where I think it's a different kind of unknown where now we've never seen Eddie Howe play around Europe. We just don't know what he does. And they're actually an odd team where the setup is pretty, you know, we know how they set up the 4-3-3. We know that in a particular game, Isak can play and in another one, Wilson can play and it's seamless. It should not change fundamentally. Obviously, opponent dependent. Isak is more energetic. Wilson is more closer to the goal. Then on the left, you can have Gordon and you can replace him with Harvey Barnes, pretty much not changing a lot fundamentally.
Right.
Almiron for Jacob Murphy, similar. So I feel that team, I fear rotation more than fundamental changes. You know, they're not going to go to five at the back just because they've had bad results, or they're not going to drop Trippier for Livramento in the league. They would rest him, but maybe not, you know, change the shape and play Trippier left back necessarily unless there's injury. So I'm a little bit more comfortable saying I can back this team based on what I've seen and the data over the longer term rather than a Chelsea where I think, anything can happen in the next year.
You're saying, you back Newcastle stylistically, right? But I do think that the rest and rotation, I mean, has there been any indication of this? We don't really know what he's going to do, right? Because on paper, and you know, who knows what that means, on paper, winnable fixtures in the league, very winnable, right? I think it's home Brentford, home Brentford, at Sheffield United, home Burnley, next three. In between those games, at AC Milan, home Man City, home PSG. What the hell is he going to do there? What are they prioritizing? Are they prioritizing top four or five this season in the league? Are they prioritizing getting out of the groups in the Champions League? No idea. Absolutely no idea.
No idea.
So, yeah.
Is he going to miss games for Livramento, or is he going to get 65 minute subs, which is actually brilliant? I mean, imagine a 65th minute sub against Burnley. I'll take that.
That happened last year, by the way.
We are in uncharted territory.
Yeah, there were times last year where
he did so many. Yeah.
Yeah, trips would come off on 79, and then you know, everyone was raging because they conceded in the 88th minute or whatever, and he gets that Max Bones huge haul. That's the thing. Like, back to trips. And Newcastle, like, that's the thing that made him so special also, was that attacking upside, bonus upside, yada, yada. And that's why, back to like Shar, like if Botman's fit or whatever, Burn or whoever, I'm just like, yeah, but is that even worth the transfer? Like, what's the best possible case for Shar? It's like three cleans out of the next four or something. Like, incredible. That would be like, you know, that's the absolute best imaginable. I mean, they could keep zero cleans. And I'm just like, is that worth using transfer for? Like that 4-point clean sheet every week? Like, probably not. But I understand people on wild card, they're probably going to go there, and that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with Cher, I think a little bit more credit in terms of attacking output. I think he was unlucky last season.
He gets his head on stuff. Yeah.
He gets his head on stuff. And I mean, after Gabriel, if I think of a defender in the Premier League, you know, the old Dawson type defenders, there's Gabriel and then there's Shar. So you could, obviously, that's you fair. Have to get lucky. But it's something that you could target. Again, going back to the discussion that you'd rather maybe get that transfer in than play Saliba, you know, home to Man City.
Right. He had 4.9 non-penalty XG last season.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Didn't really realize it was that high. It's so crazy. I mean, that's a big reason why Trips underperformed his XA so much.
Yeah.
Man, what else should we talk about? I don't even know what else to talk about.
What are you, you know, what are your plans with the future now that we're engaging in sort of future planning? I mean, obviously, you've got Sun in place. You've got a good looking midfield. You've got Salah already, right? You still have Salah.
Yep. Still have him.
Where'd you go with that? Because everyone's going to be wildcarding to get Salah by, I mean, even in a couple of weeks, Liverpool's fixtures are great.
Yeah. I mean, I still feel like my team is good. You know, I had a pretty bad game week 4, went down a bunch, although rank, whatever. That I'm not too bothered with rank right now, but I just don't know. It's like, how many bad weeks will I take if it keeps happening before I'm, you know, pressing the emergency eject button, right? So like, I have Wissa. I started with him. I think he's great.
Yep.
Their fixture, you know, they have at Newcastle, not ideal, but then they're home Everton at Forest, you know, so good. I don't feel incredible with him. I'm not here sitting like, he's obviously the best other forward in the game, but he's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sitting here with Johnstone and Turner. You know, is Hendo going to take his spot? I don't really ever want to start Turner. You know, I know he's just off, you know, clean, but I don't ever want to start him. So
this
that's
week,
a
this
concern.
Week, alone,
well, this week
is
in. This week is in. This week is in, for sure. But, you know, I'm worried about Hendo. You know, I'm worried about not having Rashford. I'm worrying about not having an Arsenal guy. So I just think things can change very, very quickly. And a lot of this season, as you've mentioned many times, is going to be like, how do you deal with the FOMO, right? Like, Arsenal braces on Sunday. Like, how is that going to make me feel? Like, I almost need to, I don't know if you listened to our preseason episode where Walsh talked to Dr. Brad about, you know, just psychology in the game and stuff like that. But I feel like almost the most productive thing I can do in terms of planning right now has nothing to do with transfers and almost has to do with how am I going to feel setting my priors, right? Like, if this happens, what do I do? If this happens, what do I do, right? Because then you're not acting on emotion as much. Because then I'm saying like, okay, if Sokka braces, you know, maybe I just need to get him right back in or whatever the decision you come to is. If Rashford braces and Bruno blanks, I need to fix that immediately, make that move. Versus waiting for it to actually happen and then sitting there going down a million places and just being like, fuck, I need a wild card. My team's horrible, you know? So that's probably where I should focus my energy. But one thing that's very different between me and you is that when there are no games on, I am completely checked out. Like, it was the NFL started this weekend. That's all I've been doing and thinking about. My Jets play tonight. That's all I'm thinking about. So this is almost like my get the juices flowing podcast with Praz. And then, you know, Thursday, me and Walsh will do a Patreon episode. And then I'll be like really, really fully back in there.
No, I mean, I think we all deserve a little bit time away from it. But I just think, yeah, you know, the mentality side of it, I think that's really interesting where the way I would react, let's say if Rashford in your place, you know, scores a brace, yeah, and you called it, you said Brighton is a Rashford game, I think, yeah, then you have to sort of trust yourself more and look forward and say, okay, yeah, is Burnley a Rashford game and do I need him or not? After that is, you know,
right,
that's the way I would sort of do it in your position. And the way I play, I'm just going to make sure that I have Rashford for the easier games, not have Madison for the couple of tough games. If Madison punishes me, I can tell myself that, look, I picked the guy who I thought will score more points. I was wrong. That's fine. I'll get Madison
exactly
in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that's why I think, again, to the planning point and why I try to write things down is because you need almost a record of what you're thinking in the moment when emotion isn't coloring everything that you're thinking, right? You need to know that, you know, Rashford, you know, Brighton, Burnley, I expect him to score goals, you know, best pick in the game, whatever, for these next two, whatever, however you actually feel about it. And then Sun kills you is what it is, man. Yeah, and, you know, like Rashford didn't get as many chances as I thought. You know, Manchester United were dysfunctional without Bruno in the middle, whatever happened. And, you know, I just got that one wrong and just move on is usually the better way to go. But it's hard, man. It's hard.
Yeah, this is going to be the season of FOMO. I almost wish that, you know, you could have an ability. You know, a lot of people do this match of the day challenge. I don't know. Obviously, I don't think you get match of the day in the US, but you do this thing where you miss all the games and you just watch them all together, like a ripping off the Band-Aid, right? I mean, but you sometimes go through the motion. Like I sort of, when I don't have a player and I put it on TV, this is not great for anyone's health, but I sort of walk around listening rather than watching. And so I didn't have the Man City guys. I didn't have Alvarez. I didn't have Foden. And the Fulham game was on. And it's torture, right? I mean, sometimes I just wish that I wouldn't do that and just not watch at all and just show up and look at the result and go, oh, okay, Alvarez got a haul. Foden got just one assist. Okay, I can live with that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's always an interesting thing when, like, I was out of town last weekend, and so I missed a bunch of games that I normally wouldn't have missed. Usually I watch like as many as possible, but it's always an interesting exercise for me before Walsh and I record to be like, okay, you know, Arsenal won 3-1. Like, how do I think that match went? What is the XG telling me? What are the stats telling me? Like, who got the points? Then I watch the highlights and then I read about it and then I listen. I'm like, oh, that is completely different than how I thought the match would have gone, right? You see 3-1, I'm like, oh, Arsenal just dominated them. They're way better. And it's like, oh, it's much different. And that's always interesting. But yeah, man, we'll see how we do with our sanity. Well, maybe me and you will check back in with each other and see how we're doing with our team. So your immediate plans are still up in the air, you're thinking? You don't know if you're going to bring in Son?
I'm going to do one of two transfers, either Saka for Son, or I'm going to get Udogi in or Poro in for maybe Saliba, I'm thinking. So one of the Arsenal guys goes, because even though it's Everton away, I'm happy to lose them for Saliba, no upside, for Saka for FOMO reasons with Son. So those are my two transfers. I'm going to do one of them. I'm going to stick with my triple Chelsea, even though I don't feel great about it. I'm going to stick with my double Man United midfield, even though I don't feel great about it. But hey, who knows, after next weekend, you know, we smash Brighton, or we don't even need to smash if it's a 2-2 game. I'm happy with having. Yeah. If Chelsea finally score a couple of goals, I think Sterling and Jackson will be involved. So we could have a completely different outlook of people sort of having FOMO of not having the Man United guys next week. I'm happy to ride it out. That's what I
Yeah, think. I mean, here's a little stat for you to close it out. There's three teams who've conceded two goals on the counterattack this season that leads the league. Manchester United, Brighton, and Arsenal. Right? Like, I think that these Arsenal fixtures are a complete bait for cleans. Absolute bait. The good ones are away. The bad ones are home. I just don't want any part of it. All mixed in with Champions League. Nightmare. And then, you know, I'm with you. You know, the Brighton attack that fixture with Rashford. I think it's fantastic. There's goals to be had. All right, Praz. Well, you know, thanks so much for coming on. Let's wrap this up. Where can people, you know, follow you, hear you, pod, read your work, watch your videos, all that stuff?
Praz _ FPL on Twitter and other good social media sites. Obviously, I co-host with Pranil and Zofar on The Wire, which we usually do on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. I also do a show on FF Scout called Deadline Dilemmas with Flapjack. So those are the couple of things that I tend to do on a weekly basis. So if you're ever looking for what to do in 5 weeks after, when you want to listen to me, do join and listen.
Or 19 weeks from now. I'll link to all this stuff in the show notes. And thanks so much, man. It was a blast.
Absolute pleasure, man. Thank you so much. And thank you for delivering the stuff, man. I mean, big fan.
Of course. Cheers, man.
Sports Social Podcast Network.